This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Black Friday has officially started at Blinds.com, and the savings are huge. Right now, you can save up to 50% site-wide and score premium doorbusters and a free professional measure. Don't wait. These deals are happening right now. Swapping out old blinds for custom window coverings is a small project with big results, and Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. With Blinds.com, there are no long lines or confusing quotes. You shop online without sacrificing quality, style, or service. One of our design experts can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. We can even handle everything from measure to install. Plus, you get window treatments for your whole home installed for just one low cost. With over 25 million windows covered, Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Blinds.com's Black Friday sales event is happening now with our best deals of the season. Save up to 50% site-wide and score premium doorbusters and a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This is Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and his guest by phone at 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC. Email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com or get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here's Eric.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric. Bob is off today again. He's having the couple of weeks off here. It's good for him. I'll be flying solo. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Did you get anything cool technology-wise for the holidays, for Christmas? Definitely happy to chat with you about some of the fun and configuring them. As you know, Ring Doorbell made the news where they had these creeps actually connecting into the into folks' homes and actually talking to kids and talking to people through the Ring Doorbell. And now there's a guy suing Amazon. And no, it's not Blumenthal. You'd think he would do it because it's right up his alley. But, of course, Bezos owns the Washington Post, so he probably won't go after that. Let's go on to what's happening here. There's a guy in Alabama who wants to file a class action lawsuit, John Orange. And he's accusing Amazon and Ring of failing to do enough to secure their security systems. There's kind of a ironic line. And of course, John Orange fellow says he had a stranger compromised his Ring doorbell and spooked his kids, and it's a direct and proximate result of the company's inability to protect its devices against cyber attack. So here's the thing, guys: if you configure your Ring doorbell with a password or password, or if you use only one factor authentication on your account, or you use the same password elsewhere, the problem's on you, right? Now, yes, Ring and Amazon, big multi-billion-dollar companies, if they actually required you to have multi-factor authentication configured, your Ring would not work because you wouldn't configure it properly. You'd have trouble, is what they're assuming. They're thinking you're not smart enough to configure the two-factor authentication on your device, so they don't mandate it. And Now this guy is saying it's Ring's fault for not properly securing the technology when, of course, he used a password that was very hackable. Hackable meaning it was used somewhere else where John Orange, let's say John Orange's email address was jorange@gmail.com, and he was already part of, let's say, a breach where they found his email address and his password already leaked out there. And his password, of course, is, you know, Orange is the New Black, let's say. That's his password. And of course, he uses that out there on the interwebs. And then he sets up his ring doorbell, and he uses the same password. It's not even hacking at that point. It's just the bad guys listening. Oh, there's John Orange. Oh, there's his password. His orange is the new black. I'm going to go ahead and see what he's got on his ring. And he's blaming Amazon. You can't. You can't really do that. However, I do kind of agree that these companies these days really need to force the two-factor authentication and the more difficult passwords so that folks don't have this happen to them. It's pretty embarrassing, right, to have your security camera used by the bad guys and have them actually talk to your kids, which is part of the design is the ability to interface with the guy dropping off the package or the bad guy trying to break into your house where you can say, hey, you. And no matter where you are in the world, in this case, the bad guys are doing it. So we'll see what happens with this class action lawsuit. I predict it's not going to go anywhere because it really is on you to lock your door and configure these basic settings. If they actually made you do it, I think Amazon and Ring are contending they probably wouldn't have a lot of users using the system because they think you wouldn't set it up properly. True or not, it is one of those things. One of the things I got for Christmas was a Next garage door, N-E-X-X. I shouldn't say Next. It's X. N-E-X-X. It's an automatic garage door opener. One of my biggest problems was knowing whether or not my kids left the garage door open when they left. You know, I got kids coming and going. These are, you know, teenage up to 22 years old. Well, he's finally out of the house. These guys are coming and going through the garage, and you never know if they close the garage door. So I would find myself waking up at, like, you know, 1 in the morning thing. Hey, is the garage door wide open? I don't know if you do that, but I do. And now with this device, this N-E-X-X garage smart home automation here from Next, you can actually know whether or not your garage door is open or closed. And it's simple as heck to configure. It's basically a little box with an antenna on it that connects to your wireless network in your home and a little wireless sensor that knows whether it's vertical or horizontal, depending on whether the garage door is open or closed. And you can open the garage door from anywhere in the world, of course, so make sure you password protect it. with two-factor authentication, make sure it's difficult. Don't let the bad guys get into your garage door from Kazakhstan. The point, though, is that you'll know exactly whether or not your garage door is open. You can just sit there, put it on any app, whether it be any device, whether it be an Android or Apple device, and you can actually take a look at the app. It'll tell you if it's green for closed, red for open, and you can push a button and close it. And I don't know. It's the little things in life that make you happy. In this case, I find myself getting up every now and again trying to figure out whether or not my garage doors are open. Now you know if they are or not. And, of course, if you need deliveries, right, you can actually open the garage door from wherever you'd like. So instead of having folks drop things in front of your garage, you can open the door, excuse me, which is pretty cool. So definitely check it out. We'll put a link out over at Computer Talk with Tab just so you guys can take a look at what it's all about. And there's a couple different flavors. You have to see if your garage door is compatible. Mine was like a 20-year-old garage door opener, and it worked fine. Because it really just has to cover two connections on the garage door. It just has to open or close them. It's really pretty simple as far as electronics go. So most of these garage door openers, I think, are going to be compatible with it. So we're going to be here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online this morning. 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. I'm flying solo, so feel free to get online. We'll talk about whatever you'd like with regard to technology. Obviously, the first part of the hour is usually light. Then by 10 o'clock, you guys are jamming the phones. So make it easier on me and give me a ring this morning. Another one real quick article I do want to bring up. A contractor admits to planting logic bombs in his software to ensure he'd get new work. So when it comes to IT, right, the IT guys are always worried about people getting replaced, right? And this guy worries that his skills are going to become obsolete. So what does he do? This guy, David Tindley, 62, from Harrison City, Pennsylvania, he was sentenced to six months, in prison and a fine of $7,500. And what he was doing, he was working for Siemens, and he had some software tool that he would let the folks at Siemens use, these managers at Siemens, use to configure or come up with some sort of calculation. And anytime the calculation didn't work out, of course, the folks at Siemens would call him. Now, he would plant logic bombs inside the software to produce the false calculations or the miscalculations. And, of course, he's the only one that could fix them. And he was doing this from the year 2014 to the year 2016. They finally sentenced him. And it looks like as far as losses, this is a big number. $42,000. Sorry. As much as 10 years in prison and $250,000 fine is what he actually faced, but they only hit him for 6 months and $7,500 scheme. But he faced $42,000 in fines and a potential 10 years in prison. So if you're out there in the IT world and you're actually damaging your customer's software so that they can pay you to fix it, look out. You could find yourself in the hooscow. We're going to step out for a quick break. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. This is Computer Talk. We'll be right back.
You're willing to sacrifice our love.
And we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric. I'm flying solo today. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. I think you're all still sleeping. I don't blame you. It's the holidays. You figured this would be, you know, I'd be off doing my thing. But no, I'm here. Drag myself in the studio to help you out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. So feel free to get online. How do you guys like online shopping? As a guy, I hate shopping, period. I don't know about you, Matt, but I do. And the thing about shopping, though, is when I want to buy something, I want to go ahead and get it. Now, you can't anymore. The local stores don't have anything anymore. And it's getting ridiculous to go on when you have to if you want to get something, you do your research. Nobody's got anything local. So now you're stuck with these online providers, and you never know if the stuff that you're going to get is like counterfeit or is it real. And you got to rely on the comments of strangers, and you have to rely on the site telling you it's a certified purchase. So you're spending all this time online trying to figure out what to get, trying to figure out if it's legit, trying to figure out why an item that's normally $200 from the manufacturer is $50 from Amazon, let's say. And you don't know if it's real or fake. I'm not sure that we're making improvements here when it comes to capitalism. The idea of capitalism is something we all love. But the point is, it should be real easy to know whether or not you're getting junk or not. And it seems there's so much stuff on Amazon these days. And, of course, I would shop anywhere, you know, anywhere you'd like. But to go online shopping and to look at these products and say, okay, here's the actual part number. Why is that part number $50 here and $200 there from the manufacturer? It didn't just fall off a truck. And now is just sitting there, you know, at a discount, unless it did fall off a truck and they're selling it because it fell off a truck, you know. I don't know. It seems more difficult these days to actually know if you're getting quality or if you're even getting the product you want online. And then you got to wait for it, right? We ordered an item. I ordered a second garage door opener because I liked the first one so much. Amazon said it would get there the same day if I ordered it within 42 minutes. Well, it didn't show up the same day, and then it didn't show up the next day. It's supposed to show up today. I know they're busy, but this is their job. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Going to Frank and Winstead. Frank, what's happening?
Hey, Eric.
Hey.
Well, I got my S mode off, and I got my printer hooked up.
Hey, good for you.
Yeah, got that. But I got one other problem.
Yeah.
When I sign in,
yeah,
and what comes up on the screen is McAfee. And it's downloading,
uh-huh,
and I don't want that. So I went, I uninstalled it.
Yeah.
It still comes up, only when I boot up. And it's still, this has been over this past week. And the only way I get rid of it is I go down into the tray.
Yeah.
I right-click, and then I get it out of there.
Right.
It's only temporary.
You're stuck in an install loop of some kind.
You think it's looking for S mode?
No, but you got it. You got out of S mode, so you can get stuff, you know, from other folks now. But
I do. I have. They gave it to me. It's a Trend Micro.
Okay,
is that good?
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, for now, it is.
That, and I got Norton, and
you got both of them running, Frank.
Yeah,
Norton antivirus and Trend Micro.
Yeah, it's Trend Micro and Trend Micro PayGuard.
Yikes. You got a lot of stuff running, and now you got McAfee trying to... Yeah, it's going to slow everything down. You should pick your poison.
Yeah, okay, I'll do that. Well, I don't know how to solve that. Only when I boot up.
Yep. Well, we got to get user removal tool. Obviously, you're stuck in a boot loop of some kind here, and there's an uninstaller that we can link over at Computer Talk for you that should allow you to run the uninstaller to rip McAfee out of there for you.
Okay.
That's really the best way to do it. And don't run multiple antiviruses. Just pick one. Pick Norton, pick Trend, whichever one. Did you pay for either of them, or are they both free?
Yeah. Okay.
Are they both free, Frank, or did you pay for either of them?
No, they're both free.
Okay. Well, don't run both of them.
Such a deal.
Too much right, medicine is not always a good thing. All right.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Frank. Good luck.
Bye.
All right. So he's going to try to get rid of his McAfee with an uninstaller, which is pretty popular. These programs these days, you just can't simply uninstall them. You have to go through an uninstaller program. So it's just what you got to do. As part of the process. So feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC, and I'll do my best to help you out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. I see Matt's taking a call right now. Ransomware is a big problem these days, and I just saw another note from Brian Krebs talking about a California business that provides cloud hosting and IT management services to more than 1,000 customers. Just recently suffered a ransomware attack this week that has disrupted operations of many of its clients, according to sources. The company has reportedly paid a ransom so that it would get things back up and running. But generally, paying the ransom still doesn't mean you're in the clear. It means you probably have some bad stuff on your computers. And now they're going to have to go through the process of trying to kill whatever is on their machines or whatever the bad guys placed on there. Because just paying the ransom is not going to mean everything is clear. And, of course, there's an ironic post that they had on there, jingle bells, phishing smells, hackers go away. This is the company that got hit with the ransomware attack. Of course, they probably were hit with a phishing scheme themselves. Phishing is the primary way the bad guys are going to load ransom software on your business machines, on your home computers, or even on your government machines, because they're going to send an email with a payload attached to it that is something they're going to get you to click on, whether it be that attachment, that link. And if you click on it, it's going to load the payload on the machine, and either it's going to delay encrypting everything or it's going to give them an in to your business or to your computer. So you need to be vigilant and not click on email these days, period. And the problem is a lot of the big companies out there still condition us to click on things, whether it's, you know, Amazon, your bank, your credit card. Hey, click on this for your 5% discount. No, stop doing that. Stop trying to get us to click on things in email. The more you do that, the more you open it for the ransomware folks to deliver the malware to your computer. So try to be vigilant. In our business at Tab, when we support our client base, you know, we support hundreds and hundreds of small businesses. We have what's called security awareness training. And through security awareness training, we can actually train your people on a regular basis. So what we try to do is trick them into clicking, right? So you first go through training, trying to show them the examples of how these phishing schemes work. We then send regular emails to them so that they are then we try to fool them into clicking on things. And believe it or not, some of the top people at the companies tend to be the clickers. Don't know why their guard is down, but you would think, you know, it could be anybody. In this case, sometimes it's the smartest folks that are tricked by these schemes, because some of these schemes are really devious. And if you continue to run these trainings on a regular basis, month after month after month after month, you will reduce the likelihood that your folks will let malware into your network. Most companies also use mail security, whether it be email security, where the attachments are scanned, the links are scanned. All of our customers use that as well. The problem is 10 to 15% still kind of get through, right? These emails are designed to trick people and get through the mail scanners. And you need your last line of defense in your company to be the folks who work there thinking about not clicking on everything that comes at them. Usually it's, hey, you've got an invoice, or hey, you've got a shipment coming, or hey, it's the IT department telling you to click here and put in your new password. They're not going to use email, guys. They're not going to do it. So security awareness training is a big aspect of NIST, which is something that our aerospace manufacturing clients have to deal with when they're building F-35 parts, right? You know, you don't want the Chinese looking at your F-35 component. So NIST 800-171 is a security compliance that allows the government folks, the primes, the Pratt & Whitney's, the Lockheed Martin's, the Sikorsky's of the world, to know that their subs are going to actually use good security practices when dealing with these components. And security awareness training that I just described is an aspect of of NIST so that your organization is at least thinking security rather than just hoping they're not going to get hit with a phishing scheme. Because these phishing schemes are out, are just broadcast constantly, right? The bad guys can email it very easily. So be aware. I'll put a link up to security awareness training, and you can get a little more information on that. I'm here till 11 o'clock, guys. I know it's one of those weekends when you guys are all sleeping in, I think. But I drag my hiney in here. I need you guys to give me a ring if you have any issues on your IT problems, whether it be business or personal. 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Everything we talk about today is posted live over at computertalkwithtab.com. It's the name of the show.com, which also works. And if you like us on Facebook over at Tab Computer Systems and Mark Zuckerberg deems the news worthy, it just might get into your news feed. We'll be right back. Good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric. Bob is off today. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. I know it's a little light this morning because you guys are all sleeping in, which maybe is what I should have done. You know those days you say to yourself, I should have stood in bed. Yeah, maybe that's what I should have done. Feel free to get online. I'll help you out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. Are you guys concerned about this? Russia has got their own cyber wall. Now, they've been talking about this for months, and they just recently tested the ability to disconnect the entire country from the internet. And they say it's to avoid a cyber attack. And heck, when the internet was kind of young, TJ and I used to have these discussions, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, about how America would protect itself in the event of a cyber attack. And back then, there was like 6 or 12 specific firewalls out there that we understood connected America to the internet. Nowadays, we're all, there's so many, you know, connections. I don't know that America could ever disconnect from the internet if in the event of a cyber attack. But Russia seems to think they can, and they're using, I guess, DNS technology to do it. We'll see. We'll see if it's something that's out there. They're calling it a sovereign internet. But it does seem like a thought, you know, the ability to at least pull the plug should you need to. Does sound a little dystopian, I know. What do you think about that? Let's get to your calls, though. We're going to go to Barbara in Plainville. What's happening, Barbara?
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I'm sure you've approached this subject before, but I have Windows 7, and mm-hmm. I need to upgrade to Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I have a desktop. I don't know if I should buy a new tower. Should I upload a CD, or should I buy a CD?
Right.
I know I have to back up all my files before I do that, but
yes.
I don't know the right approach.
How old is the computer? Let's start with how old it is first.
How old? It's maybe 4 years old.
Okay, so it's got some more life left. That's good mm-hmm. news. Is it running 8 gigs of RAM, 4 gigs of RAM? Is it a 64-bit OS, do you know?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, well, being 4 years old, I'm guessing it's running Windows 7 64-bit. You can check that by going to Control Panel and then going to System, and it'll tell you if it's Windows 7 64. And if it is running that, it's worth upgrading, and it's not too difficult to do. Obviously, save your data, like you're saying, but you can go ahead and purchase a Windows 10 operating system. It'll cost you about $180, maybe $190, and it's not an upgrade disk per se, but an upgrade will occur, and you should be able to install that disk on your existing machine and bring it up to Windows 10 rather okay. easily.
Okay. So if I... When I go into the control panel on the system and it says Windows 64?
Windows 7, 64-bit, yep.
Windows 7, 64-bit. Okay, yeah. Then it's worth upgrading. Okay.
Yep. I bet you it is. I mean, 4 years old, it's probably running at least 8 gigs of RAM, I'm hoping. And,
okay.
And it's going to be worth doing based on the age and based on that basic information. And it's straightforward. But yes, back up your data just in case things go poorly.
Okay.
Even if they do go poorly, you can still take that Windows 10 operating system and start fresh, wipe and reload the whole thing if you ever had to. But you shouldn't have to. It should upgrade. It should upgrade the machine for you.
Okay, and I can buy that at any big box store?
You should be able to. Yes. Yep.
Okay.
I'm guessing you have a Home Edition operating system, and you can get a Windows 10 Home 64-bit version, or you can get a Windows 10 Pro. If your machine is a Pro, Windows 7 Pro, go upgrade to Pro. If it's mm-hmm. Home, and you're going to upgrade to Home.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck, Barb.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye. Definitely worth doing. A four-year-old machine still has a couple more years left of life. May as well upgrade it while you're at it. Let's go to Sandy in Southington. What's going on, Sandy?
Hi, I kind of have a similar question. I have no idea how old our computer is. I think it's older than 4 years old. And I know I've heard you say eventually Windows 7 will, like, just disappear or blow up or...
No, never would I have ever said that. It'll still...
No.
So it won't disappear. It won't blow up. Microsoft would like you to think it would. But
okay.
But what's going to happen is they're going to stop updating the security on the machine on January 14th. However, they just recently announced that they will continue to update Windows Defender. So if you're running their antivirus on the Windows 7 computer, they're going to keep updating it past that period. Okay? That's going to extend the life a little bit.
Okay. And the other thing we get pop-ups of that says something about your drive, and I'm not a computer person.
Mm-hmm.
I do what I need to do, and that's about it. But it pops up something about your drivers. You know, do you want to upgrade your drivers? And I just say no thanks, but I'm wondering what does that all mean?
So updating drivers on the operating system is designed to, quote-unquote, improve things. So there might be a new video driver out for that video card on your Windows 7 computer that they, the manufacturer, think will improve things. Now, when you go upgrade to Windows 10, all those drivers are moot anyways.
Okay.
Because you'll need Windows 10 drivers. So the question, though, is, Sandy, try to figure out how old that machine is. If it's five years old or older, you should replace the computer. If it's four years and under, you can upgrade it.
Now, is there any way when you go into the control panel, you can find out how old the computer is?
Generally, no. If you have a manufacturer, though, if it's an HP or a Dell, if you have the actual serial number or the service tag number, you can go to, in the case of Dell, support.dell.com and put in the service tag, and it'll tell you how old it is right there.
All right. Well, I appreciate that, and I tell you, I do enjoy your show, and you do help a lot of people, and Happy New Year to you.
You too, Sandy. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah, the key here for Windows 7 to Windows 10 is no, the machine's not going to blow up. It's not going to stop working, no matter how much Microsoft is going to try to scare you into upgrading. You should consider upgrading. It's different for the home user as it is for the business user. We actually picked up a financial planner client who was going to get an audit by the SEC. So what does he do? He hires us to come in there and put our security tools in just before the SEC comes in to do his audit so that we can tell him, oh, he's got this security, he's got that security, he's doing all these great things. And then he fires us so that he doesn't have to pay for those security tools anymore. So you got to think about who you're working with in the business world, because, you know, if your doctor, if your accountant, if your lawyer is not upgrading the security on their computers, do you want your stuff on their machines? Are they taking care of your data? Are they taking care of you as a customer? It's pretty amazing out there. So if you're in the business world and you're running a seven-year-old Windows 7 computer and you're not planning on upgrading it, that's kind of shame on you. I understand Microsoft is doing this kind of arbitrarily, as far as you would think, saying, look, we're no longer going to support this old operating system. But that's neither here nor there. If they don't support it and the security patches no longer come down, your customers and you are at risk of being impacted by some sort of malicious event because you haven't filled a hole. Now, with Microsoft, if you listen to the show for the past 25 years, they're full of holes. They're constantly patching problems, right? They're going to stop filling these holes on January 14th for the Windows 7 operating system. So the bad guys will be aware of the new holes that we may not be aware of now. Microsoft is not going to patch them, and you're now at risk. And I'm not sure if it's worth whatever savings you're going to have by not upgrading versus the costs you might occur that might occur on you if you don't upgrade. So it's, you know, it's your only your customer's data and your business that you have to pay attention to. For home users, it's a little different, right? I mean, you guys can maybe risk it a little longer, delay it a little bit longer. It's up to you. You're not launching the space shuttle on your computer. However, if you're using your machine for banking or what have you, anything where there's data on there that you'd be worried about if the bad guys got a hold of it, you should upgrade, right? That way, any malicious attempts on Windows 7 that have not been patched can be dealt with Windows 10 because you've done the updates. So we're going to step out for a quick break here, guys. Four lines open for you on this lovely Saturday morning. I know you're all sleeping. Trust me, I understand. 800-966-WTIC-522. There the phones are ringing. 522-WTIC. I'm going to be here till 11 o'clock. And then Dr. Les will be in with Healthy Rounds, and he'll give you a second opinion on your health advice. Stick around. We'll be right back. We are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric. And I'm here till 11 o'clock. And you guys are all waking up. Now the phones are going cuckoo. So thank you for joining me on this Saturday morning. Otherwise, I'm just talking about my kids by myself. That would be really, really boring radio. Let's go on to Sherry in West Hartford. Hey, Sherry, what's up?
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Of course.
I'm sort of in the same situation that several other callers are in. I've got a Dell computer running Windows 7.
Yep.
Mine is actually Intel i5-240,
okay.
4 gigabytes.
Okay.
I love this because it's got Picasa on my hard drive, and I really like Picasa.
Yeah.
And I don't really want to lose it, but I understand that I'm going to have to upgrade.
Yep.
Okay. Right now it's a Dell, and I have a laptop HP, which I love, but do you think you still need a desktop?
Only if you think you need it, right? So it's all up to you, Sherry, as far as your usage. A desktop is one that's going to last you a lot longer, especially if you're not mobile with it anyways.
Right.
It's going to sit there and be protected, and I would contend to give you anywhere from 6 to 8 years of service. Okay. A laptop, you drop it a few times, all of a sudden you're buying a new one.
Okay. So, and right now I have a Dell laptop. I mean, a Dell desktop.
Yep.
Do you have recommendations for what type of...
machine?
Desktop.
Yeah. Your basic minimums would be an i5 like you had.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be an 8th or 9th gen processor. Make sure it's probably a 9th gen processor these days.
Okay.
8 gigs of RAM or better.
8 gigs, yeah.
Solid state drive. If you can afford a solid state, that'd be nice to have that in there. Otherwise, get a hybrid drive, which has some solid state characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
And Windows 10. Those are your basics for a basic home machine that should give you another 6 to 8 years of service.
And HP or a Dell would be?
Yeah, whatever brand you're comfortable with. You've got both in your home, so you can do either one.
Right. Let me ask you something, because really, one of the reasons, one of the big reasons I'm holding on to this Windows 7 is because of that Picasa.
Yeah.
We have all of our pictures, and I have sent some of them over to iGoogle or Google Photos, which I really don't like.
Okay.
I don't like the system. And it's arranged so much better on Picasa. There's no way that they would bring back Picasa, right?
No, I don't think so. When they say that it's dead, it's dead. So they're done with Picasa. For whatever reason, I have no idea why they killed it.
Yeah, it's a great... And there's no way I can save that. It's on the hard drive. I can't move it anywhere.
You can. You have to reinstall it on the new Windows 10. Unless, I mean, you could technically, but it's more pain than I could describe for you. You'd have to spin up a virtual Windows 7 system and have it sit on the Windows 10 machine for that to work, which is a lot more trouble than it's worth.
Okay. So there's no way I'm going to be able to do that.
Nope. You're going to have to go to some other picture management software. And be careful putting your stuff out there on the Google Cloud. They're going to start charging for how much is out there as well.
Yeah. And do you recommend any other type, like a Picasa type of program?
No, I don't use anything to manage my pictures like that. I just use simple folders, and that's it. I don't use any kind of software tool to manage them.
How do you do it? So you download them from your camera or your iPhone onto a folder?
Yeah, I make a directory, and I name it what the pictures were all about, whether it was a birthday party or a vacation, and I put the year on it, and simple as that. I mean,
I didn't even know you could do that. I thought it had to be a special program.
No, you just make a directory. So you could call it, you know, C:\photos/, and then you create your directories as you wish, year after year after year, and they're all broken down that way for you by default.
And that's interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Okay.
It's
so
a little old
school.
Plug
in your camera.
Yeah.
What opens up?
You'll try to browse to the camera. You'll see your DCIM, right? DCIM directory, and you'll be able to go ahead and copy and paste them over the way you normally would, but you don't have to use a tool to import them. You can just copy them from your actual card, your little SD card. You have an SD card reader?
Yes.
So take the SD card out of the camera. Don't do it from the camera, because if you've listened to the camera shows, you have a problem during that transfer. You can lose everything.
Okay.
So take the SD card out, put it in the reader, navigate over to it, copy and paste.
I had no idea. Well, that solves the problem right there.
Yeah, just it's basic directory usage.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for that. Love the program.
Thanks, Sherry.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Yep, pretty straightforward, but, you know, old school stuff. Let's go on to. I'm going to go on to Kate in Glastonbury. Hey, Kate. You there, Kate?
Good morning.
Morning.
We're going to be replacing a approximately 7-year-old desktop computer that we've used primarily for our financial records, Quicken, TurboTax, mm-hmm. Bill Pay. In the past, we've used it for some other things, too, mm-hmm. but I know through listening to your program, you recommend, I believe, just using a financial computer exclusively for that and
yes.
not, like, surfing or purchasing or
yes.
things like that. So,
yep.
you know, we have a little bit different mindset now than when we purchased this 7 years ago.
Right.
And I want to make sure, like, you know, I think I've picked up that you like to... or suggest not backing up that computer to the cloud, but maybe on a local hard drive. I think I've heard you say in the past, when you're not using it, like, shut it off. And mm-hmm. One question I have about that is, I mean, literally, like, it's totally not connected and then off, or just shut down the program?
You can just,
so,
yeah.
Just different things that you might think with regard to an exclusive financial computer.
So depending on the software that you use, a lot of folks are recommending, I mean, I've heard Clark Howard recommend it as well, simply using a Chrome-based laptop for your financial work, because a lot of the systems you're going to connect to are browser-based, right? So as long as you're not using the laptop for running a local tax program or what have you, if it's all web-based, you can get away with a Chromebook or some sort of Chrome-based or just a browser-based laptop to work with your financial needs. And then the computer, you could just buy a regular computer to do everything else, right? To do your video, your videos, your picture manipulations, your data, your surfing, whatever you want to do. But just buy a basic financial CPU that way with a Chromebook. And there's no need to back anything up in that case, because you're only working on the cloud anyways, right? Because most of your applications are in the cloud, I suspect.
So where would like a copy of my tax return be?
So again, if you're doing this on a local computer, then this idea does not work. If you've got the local program, if you're using a web-based tax program, then you would have it all. It's all in the cloud, right? You're going to log into the service and do your updates and changes there. If you have a local tax program, then you're going to have to get a separate real computer to do everything as well. The Chromebook is just a neat idea if you're going to be using nothing but web-based financial tools, which a lot of them are these days.
Well, when you say that, so, like, I typically have gone out to a store and gotten a physical, computer
yeah.
disk with the program, and that's how I use it. And I've stayed away from sort of the cloud because I thought then my information was more in jeopardy. So I'm a little confused.
I don't blame you. And I'm not trying to make you confused. However, if you think about how you connect to your financial institutions, they're all cloud-based, right? You're connecting to your
Correct.
Bank and the cloud. You're connecting to, let's say it's Fidelity or whatever it might be, Vanguard. Those are all in the cloud, right? Even your financial planners, believe it or not, are doing everything on the cloud, right? So if you can use a tax program that was also cloud-based through the same exact machine that did all your other financial work, it'd be like the perfect tool. Yes, the damage of having that cloud impacted is a problem, right? I don't disagree with that. But if you're not going to use the machine for anything else and just use it for your financial work, the only risk you have is if that tax-based program in the cloud gets hit, which it happens, right? I'm not going to tell you it's not. It could happen, but it's an option. So if you find you're using TurboTax, check to see if they have a cloud-based solution. And now you can do everything on that one Chromebook, right? As an idea.
Right.
That's just a thought.
Okay.
Now, if you're like, hey, I hate that idea, I just want to get a regular PC, that's fine. You can get a Windows-based PC, operate locally on the Windows computer, load your software like you're saying, and then, yes, back it up to, you know, a couple of hard drives or a couple of thumb drives that are not on the cloud. That's fine. But a lot of the financial work that's done these days, even by our financial planners, is stuck in the cloud. The sad part is when you bring over your thumb drive full of data, they stick it in their computer, and you could have a bunch of Excel spreadsheets on their laptop that they forgot, right, depending on how sloppy they are as far as moving their data around. But, yeah, that's an idea. You know, I've heard it before from other financial folks. Again, bring up Clark Howard. I've heard similar things from him as well. I do not do a lot of cloud-based financial work. I don't do the whole all of it at all. I'm a set it and forget it kind of guy.
Okay.
Remember, I'm not a financial planner. I'm a geek.
I'm a regular listener. I listen all the time, and I just had a sense that you were saying, stay away from the cloud.
I know.
Sensitive information.
I know.
So I was thinking for sure that I'd be getting this, local machine and a local little, separate hard drive and save it that way.
You can, though, Kate. You can. But the point is, you're doing it for financial. If you think about all the other areas that you connect to your financial institutions, they're all in the cloud, right?
Right.
So they all have all that data you're bringing into your tax program. It's already in the cloud. So if any of them get hit, then you're impacted, right? So it's like, if you're going to come with a solution where you're just going to make a device designed for your financial work, this could make sense to you, right? You can still tell, you can still decide, you know what, I like the idea, but I'm going to get a regular computer. Sure, you can do that as well. But with everything going this way, and you're doing it already in the cloud with everything else, you're not using local paper and pencil creating an Excel spreadsheet to manage your funds, are you?
No.
No, you're connected to some cloud service to get that information updated, right?
Correct.
So because you're already there, it'd be silly for me to tell you to bring it all down local just to manage your taxes. If you can find a cloud-based tax solution, which I'm not sure if there's one out there, there should be one, but I can go find one for you. And you can even check your favorite application. I bet you it exists if your taxes aren't too complicated. It might kill all the birds for you. With one device designed just for your financial work, don't do any other surfing on it. Just have good antivirus on it. Just all you do is turn it off when you're done with it. Yes, turn it off. You can unplug it if you want to, as far as I'm concerned, but only use it for your financial work. It could work for you.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does make sense. I guess I just wasn't anticipating
I know.
What you were going to say.
I know. Sorry. If you're using a machine for other stuff, then it's a whole. Then it all goes to pot, right? Because now all of a sudden the machine's being used for documents and editing videos and pictures, and all of a sudden now we warn you not to use that machine for financial work, and now you're buying a second computer.
Right.
Which is probably the case in this case as well. If you go with the idea I just described, you're going to buy a Chromebook of some kind for your financial work and a new computer for everything else.
Right.
That's how I would consider it.
Okay.
Sorry to confuse you.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for the information.
All right, Kate.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. The more and more I see the financial clients that we deal with, putting everything in the cloud anyways, it's hard, as far as the financial data, to get away from them without... if you can't beat them, join them kind of thing. But the risk will be on the host. We're going to be here till 11 o'clock. Kyle, Dana, Bob, hang on. We have one line open for you, or Diana. One line open for you, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. This is Computer Talk. We'll be right back.
I'm Tank Sinatra.
And I'm Investigator Slater.
And together we co-host a podcast called Psychopedia, which is a true crime podcast infused with comedy, making it a crimedy. Each week, Investigator Slater brings us a wild and thoroughly researched true crime case. I'm here to digest it all and react just like you probably are right there on the other side of the microphone.
Somehow, I've got to present each case with the detail and respect it deserves, while also cracking up at Tank's perfectly timed humor and thought-provoking questions.
Listen to and follow Psychopedia on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.